And now, it's time for the biggest bonanza in podcasting. With Dominic Stern and Nicholas Hodel, this is the College Basketball Bonanza.
Welcome in to the College Basketball Bonanza, late February, Sunday night. My name is Nicholas Hodel. Dominic Stern is alongside me. The third member of our team, Don Contini, is out in Cleveland tonight covering the NBA All-Star Game. So it is just myself and Mr. Stern tonight. Dominic, you know what we're going to have this time next week?
Brackets.
Yes! Yes, we're going to have brackets next week at this time. How does that feel?
It's cool. I'm looking forward to it. It's always fun. March Madness. The majority of fans, you know, they get amped to see the Field of 68. And that's when bracket season really starts for them. But bracket season truly starts once it becomes March. I love watching all those guys. I mean, those players at the mid-major level have worked just as hard as a lot of the guys, the Power 5 or really Power 6 level have. And their only way to get in to the to get into the tournament is by winning these conference tournaments. So, I mean, every single game, these guys are playing for their season with their brothers. I mean, it's truly something special. I wish more college basketball fans could get more into it. And that's why we're here. We're here to cover it all. We love it. It's a lot of fun. And I know that I've certainly got my eyes on some teams. And there are some teams that aren't maybe at the top of their conference, but that I really like. Even our friends, they know one of those teams in the Ace Sun. We're not going to reveal them because they'll have to wait to watch us on Twitter with
yes.
our bracket breakdowns.
Yes,
but
they will be returning. They will be returning, and we're very excited about that. We're going to get straight into things, though. And yesterday, the selection committee gave us a little taste of what it would have looked like if the season had ended on Saturday with the bracket preview and the top four seed lines. And we're just going to start by kind of reacting to that a little bit. And my first reaction is I'm not surprised by the teams that were included. I do think perhaps some people may have been a little surprised that Houston didn't get enough for the four seed line. But I'll explain that in a little bit. Let's give your initial reactions first to the 16 teams that were included.
Well, so the first thing I was looking for was to see who would be the top overall seed. That, of course, was the Gonzaga Bulldogs, who I think a lot of people think is the best team in the country. Whether or not you think they have the best chance at winning the national championship, Gonzaga has been the best team in college basketball. Just about every metric agrees with that. Number one in KenPom, number one in net. Net, of course, is the important one. So to see them at the number one seed, I think, was interesting to see. Because Auburn only had two losses. They were equal opponents, but they have just a more consistent resume because, of course, they play in the SEC. They were the two seed. However, they lost on Saturday. So they they would not be the number two overall seed, of course, if they did this on Sunday. And then after that was Arizona, who, of course, I mean, these were going to be the three top teams. But then at Kansas at the four, I was kind of surprised to see Kansas at the four there. Not to say that they don't deserve it because they only have four losses on the year, but
who are you expecting to be there?
Well, I mean, I was looking Kentucky possibly. They do have five losses as opposed to Kansas's four losses. They did go in and crush Kansas, so I thought the committee might take that into account, but that would have been the other team I was looking for was Kansas.
Yeah,
there.
Kentucky on Saturday was number three in both net and KenPom.
They're number two in KenPom now.
Yeah, so they've risen a spot since. And I've got Saturday's net and KenPom profiles here to speak as of Saturday and as of that reveal. So this is kind of what I'm working off of to try to give our listeners sort of the best possible angle of what I saw and what we were viewing as this was being revealed. And you're right, like, there wasn't too many surprising stuff here. Now, Houston was the only team that was in both the net and KenPom top 15 on Saturday that was not included in the top four seed lines. And I've got a big reason, a couple of them, but they're both in one quadrant, the first quadrant. Every other team in the net top 15 as of Saturday morning had, at the bare minimum, three quadrant one wins. Almost all of them had five, at least. UCLA is one that did not. They had three. Houston was the other with a big, fat goose egg in that category. And by the way, they've only then at that point in time, they'd only played 3 Quadrant 1 games, period. That speaks a lot of volumes when the teams you're trying to compete against for those spots have 12 Quadrant 1 games, 11 Quadrant 1 games, 6 Quadrant 1 games in the case of UCLA. Those were the 3 teams in the net top 20 that were on the 4 line. Providence was the other team on that 4 line, and they have just really bucked all the metrics in this particular season. But it's something I think Houston's going to have to contend with a little bit. They're going to have to really win some games going forward, and hopefully they can take advantage of some other teams falling. I think that's what it's going to take at this point for Houston. Like, their conference hasn't given them too many opportunities this year.
No, and they blew their 2 opportunities last week.
Yeah, and that's a big deal.
But, I mean, looking at their next 5 games, their last 5 games of the regular season, they play at Tulane, and Tulane's one of the better games in the conference, especially at Tulane. They have SMU, who is the 3rd best team in that conference. They have Cincinnati, who is the 4th best team in that conference. Then home against Temple, that's one that you absolutely have to win and you want to look good in. And then at Memphis, which is the best win you can pick up in the American. So there are opportunities for Houston to get in here. They're probably sitting on the 4 or the 5 line, but I also think the fact that they're without Marcus Sasser and Tremont Mark, because, I mean, the committee is, they're looking at a plethora of things when ranking a team. And it would be unjust to Houston to rank them so high when they are going to be playing without Sasser and Mark. Like, right. The committee does take this into account.
Yeah.
So, especially when there are some teams who have played games, like such as Kentucky, and why I thought they should have been the 1 seed, was that most of their losses have come when they weren't at full strength, and also in just tough environments. So, they, I thought, could have gotten a bump, but Houston, of course, is going to get a downgrade because they're evaluating the teams of where they're going to be come tournament time. That's what it comes down to. So if you have injured, if you have players who aren't going to play in the tournament, you're going to see a little bit of a bump down. But if you were missing guys and some losses, the committee does take that into account, which I think is awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be a really fascinating, right, over the next few weeks, because within those top 4 seeders, there are a bunch of different stories to really look at. Is there a particular team that, first off, was in those top 4 seedings you could see falling out in the next 3 weeks?
Providence. I mean, the metrics are very, they've been right on Providence. Providence wins, but they win close games against teams that they should be better than. And I mean, that's exactly what happens.
And they did it again today against Butler.
They escaped against Butler, yeah, is what really happened.
Jeez.
Needed overtime, needed to come back down double digits at halftime. I mean, credit to them, they did it, but they have time and time again. I mean, my friend keeps saying, like, why are they rated so low? And I'm like, well, because they don't win by a lot. Like, they moved up early, and they've hung around because they've just done exactly what the metrics have predicted them to do. They haven't outperformed to what the metrics have. So, yeah, they win. But, I mean, coming down the stretch, Xavier, Creighton, and at Villanova to end their season. I mean, those are 3 tough games. Creighton, I don't know how Creighton does it. And Greg McDermott has done a fantastic job with this team, winning 5 straight. That's going to be a tough game at home, although Providence only has 1 loss at home. Xavier, they need a win because they're kind of teetering towards becoming a bubble team with their recent slides. That is a huge opportunity for them. I mean, they're going to need to win these games. And if they win at Villanova, I mean, that's huge. They're going to be – KenPom projects them to lose that game by 10 points. And so if you win that game, you're really helping yourself out.
And one more thing before we move on to away from the bracket preview and more towards – the general conversation of some of these conferences. Is there a team that did not get included in the top 4 seed lines outside of Houston, since we've talked about them a little bit, that you could see jumping into the top 4 seed lines in 3 weeks?
I mean, maybe UConn. They've done an impressive job. Arkansas has won a lot lately. They've been super impressive, so I'd say them. That's probably it, because those are the teams that have won and they look good by metrics. But Arkansas, I mean, they stay hot. And the way they play at home, they've been super impressive. You got to win at Florida this upcoming week. And as we've seen, Florida, it's not an easy place to win ever. And Auburn just lost there. They have Kentucky, LSU, and at Tennessee. I mean, if you can find a way to pick up some of these games, none of these games are easy. You get 2 really good teams at home. And you get at Tennessee, which has been a tremendous place to play because Tennessee is yet to lose a home game. So If you win at Florida, you're looking really good. And then if you can win one or two of the final three games, set yourself up to go make a run in the SEC tournament, whether you win it or not. I think Arkansas has got a shot.
Well, let's move on to the Big Ten and the situation with this conference. It has become very intriguing as of late for this conference, a conference that we can say with pretty much certainty is going to get probably at the bare minimum six, with Purdue and Illinois, Ohio State, Iowa, Wisconsin, Michigan State, all in a very good spot as far as making the NCAA tournament. There's three teams, though, that have been very interesting to follow. Michigan, the first one, we're going to just quickly touch on the Juwan Howard situation earlier today.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it deserves to be a season-long suspension. Like, that's unacceptable at any point.
And it would be different if this was a first-time offense. But, I mean, Juwan Howard had an incident with Mark Turgeon last year, coach of Maryland. So, like, this isn't a first-time thing. And I don't want to say like it's a dangerous situation, but this is the leader of Michigan. And Michigan's one of the biggest brands in all of college sports. And the university needs to keep Juwan Howard in check. Obviously, it's emotional for him. He's coaching at the university that he brought to great heights as a player. He's back there. They were a fantastic team last year. Didn't get the chance the year before when they were still a good team. And now they're fighting for a bubble. And he's trying to, you know, get his guys to step up. But Juwan Howard's a big dude. He's a big dude. He can seriously hurt someone. So Howard needs to be a little bit more careful. I don't know if he's going to be on the sideline for the rest of the year. I saw that Jeff Goodman talked with an anonymous conference commissioner and said that he would suspend him for the rest of the regular season and their conference tournament. And then if Michigan does find a way to get in, you can reward their team by having their coach come back for the NCAA tournament. I mean, I just think that he should be done for the year. Like, it's different because it's not a first-time offense.
Because, like, he got his hand on, like, the head of one of, I think it was an assistant. Like,
yeah, it was their
assistant.
Like,
are you kidding me? What are you doing?
No, it's a really bad look. And, I mean, he's got to be more careful. Obviously, things have not gone well for Michigan. They were frustrated that Wisconsin was calling a timeout. But at the same time, Michigan was playing hard at the end of that game. So when Wisconsin calls a timeout to get in their backups, like, you shouldn't be taking – you should be more frustrated with your players for losing a game that gives yourself a really good opportunity to play yourself into the field.
Yeah.
It's just not a good look. Juwan Howard is a good guy by all by all accounts, but you can't do that. And he's going to be severely punished. I mean, the athletic directors of the University of Michigan, they were very apologetic. I mean, they recognized the severity of the situation, but that doesn't excuse what he did.
Yeah, and then just to get more into Michigan's resume situation, because the team also needs to be very careful down the stretch here. They won in the NCAA tournament in the first place.
They're not a tournament team.
Yeah, at 14-11, they only have one quad three loss, 3-7 now in quad one. But as of Saturday, the general consensus on the bracketology is a team that's in, which is very interesting to me.
Yeah.
At this point, in 90 of 119 brackets recorded by the Bracket Matrix as of Saturday.
Yeah, and I mean, that's fine, but I mean, this team, they're 14-11. Like, what have they done to prove that they deserve to make it into the NCAA tournament, with the exception of a couple of very nice wins? That's literally it. Now, I mean, if you pick up these nice wins, that's cool, but they've shown zero consistency all year. How many games in a row has Michigan won this year at their longest winning streak?
I don't think I can.
It's three.
Three.
They've won three straight games. Maryland at Indiana, which is a great win. And then Northwestern. That's not an impressive win streak. That's their only three-game winning streak of the year.
Oof.
So I don't know how people can look at this team and say they're an NCAA tournament team. They've shown times why they had that top five ranking at the beginning of the year, but they're just not that team. I don't think they're a tournament team, and they should not be rewarded unless they make a serious run here in the final stretch of the season, which they absolutely can. Their next five games are at home.
That's a big opportunity for them.
Next four. Sorry. Counting.
Still, big opportunity for the Wolverines going forward to win some home games and to try and get in. How about the Indiana Hoosiers, a team that has also been very interesting to follow? They've only won a couple quad one games. No losses in either of the bottom two quads, which is a good sign for them. Also in a similar situation to Michigan, where they are considered in the matrix as an 11 as of Saturday. 2-7 in quad one. Several wins in quad two, no bad losses in the bottom two quads, which is a big deal to me in particular. this Indiana team, like, oh, man, it's just been so hard to see where Indiana's been going as of late. But, I mean, they got a couple of road opportunities down the stretch that they need to be taking advantage of, but also a couple of home games down the stretch that, if they lose, can change their situation in a heartbeat.
Right. Maryland and Rutgers have been horrible on the road this year, so you really got to look at those games as a must-win. You really want to win at Minnesota. Obviously, playing at the Barn is difficult, and then the other games are at Ohio State and at Purdue. I mean, you're probably looking at some losses there, especially for a team that has only won twice on the road all year. And that was at Maryland, who was one of the worst teams in the conference, and at Nebraska, the worst team in the conference. So signs aren't looking good for Indiana. They've lost four straight. However, I mean, this team has been fairly consistent all year. Prior to this four-game losing streak, they had never lost two games in a row. Every loss, they had rebounded with a win. And most of those wins have been very impressive. A 13-point win over Nebraska, you know, I mean, that's fine. A big win over Merrimack, I mean, it's what you have to do. After they lost at Penn State, which is not a good loss, they turned around and beat Ohio State by 16 points. After they lost at Iowa, they won on the road at Nebraska by 6. It's a road win. And then after they lost to Michigan at home after beating Purdue by 18, they turned around and beat Penn State by 17. So this team has responded really well, which has made this four-game losing streak pretty shocking. But if you're Mike Woodson, you just got to get the guys to rally strong. If they can find a way to pull off the win at Ohio State, who is also not playing that well. I mean, they've been okay, but not playing that well. That would be huge for them. I'd imagine Indiana's going to hear their name on Selection Sunday.
And let's discuss Rutgers a little bit. This is one of the craziest resumes that I've seen in a long time. A team that has the ugliest of losses, with the loss back in November at home against Lafayette, and some of the best wins you could imagine. On the road against Wisconsin, home against Purdue, home against Illinois, amongst others, within seven quadrant one wins for this Rutgers team. And this is a team that is not viewed favorably by net in the mid-70s. But as the committee has shown, they're not afraid to go down a little bit and touch some of those guys deeper in net. Because in last year's tournament, if you had the win-loss, if you had a decent win-loss record within the top 48 of net, chances are you got in, as there was only two teams in the top 48 of net that did not get in. Meanwhile, Michigan State, 70th, Wichita State, 72nd, did get in. So Rutgers is in a very similar range, and it would be by no means something that would be out of the realm of possibilities. And we go back to 2019 before they refined the net system. They reached out and picked several teams that were outside the top 55 in net. Arizona State was 63rd that year. Minnesota 61st. Seton Hall and Temple were also outside the top 55. And compared to some of the other bubble teams, Rutgers' net is way off from some of the other teams that would be considered to be inside the bubble. And bracketologist.com has a very good scatter plot showing that Rutgers, competitor teams like in SMU, Florida, Indiana, North Carolina, they are way away from some of those other teams. Yet the seven quadrant one win for this team stands out to me. It really does.
They're, like you mentioned, their resume is so wacky, but I mean, they're an impressive team, no doubt. And I said last week, you know, you look at their quality wins, and ever since, it was really at the beginning of the year when they really faltered. It was that 1 week stretch where they lost to Lafayette, UMass, and I forget the other team. But I mean, ever since then, they've been an extremely consistent team. They've been extremely dominant in the Big Ten play. I mean, they're going to be competing for that double bye in the Big Ten tournament. They won't get it, but they're going to be competing for it. They've just been super impressive, and I think they deserve to be in the NCAA tournament. If they win at Michigan, that is absolutely huge for them, because that's going to push Michigan down, because that's probably a quad two loss at that point. And it's a quad one win for Rutgers, which, of course, adds to their resume. And it also just pushes Michigan down, because they're a bubble team that they're going to be competing with. So massive game for both sides, but it's an even bigger game for Rutgers, because they have more to gain. Michigan has more to lose in that game. And especially with all the Juwan Howard talk surrounding Michigan, it's going to be tough for the players to focus.
Rutgers also has a home game against Wisconsin coming up and a road game against Indiana coming up. And that road game against Indiana is a big one for both teams.
Yeah, same bubble spot.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to see plenty of bubble eliminators and over the next several weeks, and Rutgers has two of them.
They're projected to lose both those games by six, so on KenPom, of course. So that, of course, is going to be where, I mean, their season, I don't want to say it's going to be decided, but the home game against Penn State, you really can't lose that. The home game against Wisconsin, I mean, that's a massive game.
Let's talk about Memphis a little bit over the next few minutes here. So this is a team that, I mean, we had just really hammered on Memphis for the longest of times after what was, let's not sugarcoat it, it was a really pathetic start from a team that had so much talent. But over the last several weeks, this team has started to build together some wins. Now, today they got crushed by SMU on the road, but this is a resume that can sort of compete with some of these other bubble teams. Three Quadrant 1 wins, 3-4 in Quadrant 2, which is not a bad record by any stretch of the imagination. A couple of losses in Quadrant 3, and one of them is a pretty pathetic one at Georgia, and the other one at East Carolina ain't moving anywhere. But what they've done over the last several weeks has been like, whoa, what the heck? This team's all of a sudden decent?
Yeah, and it's all come right after the departure, or really just the injury, to Amani Bates, who, of course, reclassified and changed his decision to go from Michigan State next year to go to Memphis this year. As soon as he's got hurt and as soon as DeAndre Williams has come back, that's immediately when Memphis has taken their stride. They've gone more back to their defensive strategy, you know, just hounding the ball and then moving fast and not trying to let the young freshman, Amani Bates, do whatever he wants, just letting your experienced players like Williams, Landers Nolly, who of course is a transfer from Virginia Tech, let them do what they have done on the offense and let the defense hound. And I mean, it's worked. It did not work today against SMU, but they've looked really good. I'm still not entirely sure they're a tournament team because you're looking at it in the American Conference, they already have 9 losses, and the American's weak this year.
Very
looking
much
at
so.
Some of these wins, obviously the 10-point win at Houston and the 7-point win at Cincinnati, are massive, but outside of that, I mean...
And let's not forget, before you continue, the couple of wins that Memphis has at a conference that has held up to this point. The win on a neutral floor against Virginia Tech, at the moment, is holding up to the Quad 1 win. It is a game that could very much change in a dime. And Alabama, remember that game?
Yeah.
In December. They're 22nd in net, need to be in the top 30 for it to stay there. Virginia Tech, 41st on a neutral floor. That needs to be in the top 50 for it to stay there. It's a couple of teams that Memphis is really hoping stays in Quadrant 1 territory.
Yeah, I think Alabama will. I'm not so sure about Virginia Tech. Obviously, they're a great shooting team, but they've been inconsistent. Beating Virginia Tech on a neutral floor by the net standard is a good win, but they're probably not a tournament team. You know, they beat St. Louis at home. It's a good win by 16. Probably not a tournament team. It all just depends on how you view this. Memphis will probably play its way into the NCAA tournament because they're a fun team. Penny Hardaway, too. And, of course, this 7-game winning streak that they rattled off starting on January 23rd. And they have some opportunities down the end of the stretch. I mean, they really want to win these next 3 games. Home Temple, home Wichita State, and at USF. I mean, they really need to win three of those games.
Yeah, those are 2 quad 3 games and a quad 4 game.
Yeah, so you can't lose those games. And then in comes Houston. If you can win that game, that's massive for you. If they win that, they're absolutely probably in the tournament.
Yeah.
Assuming they win those first 3. But that's what they got to focus on first.
Yeah, and it's a team with 2 quad 3 losses and only 3 quad 1 wins. I mean, those 3 games are probably must wins at that particular point. Get you to a pretty solid spot in the win-loss territory. You would face Houston. Still some stakes there for Memphis, but I don't think you will lose a ton by losing that game and then winning those 3, as long as we don't get a ton of mass chaos elsewhere where bubble teams are winning their way in to the projected field. It almost just kind of seems like to me that maybe it was Amani Bates that was kind of holding this team back a little bit,
no,
like you were saying earlier.
100% what it was.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, you like to have those young guys, but it just seemed like Amani Bates didn't have it. And I do wonder if he, I mean, I you have to pull up how many turnovers per game he has, but it just seemed like it just wasn't working. And whatever it was in the early part of the year that just allowed this team to lose just silly games. I mean, even the array games that are in Quad 2, like, I don't think this team has any business losing at Ole Miss and at Tulane at all.
No.
But yet, that's what's on their resume. That's what's holding them back, as well as the two Quad 3 losses I mentioned earlier. So it does almost seem like the departure of the freshman kind of gave this team a little added something to this team.
Yeah, I've got his numbers pulled up. Not one game did Imani Bates play over 30 minutes. He played 30 minutes twice this season, several times getting close to that mark. In their three-game losing streak in January, where the signs really started to flash for Memphis, he had four turnovers in each of those games, playing 29, 27, and 24 minutes, while scoring 12, 13, and 6 points. So not good there. And then the next two
games... You can't have those numbers from your point guard.
No, and then the next two games, which started the winning streak, of course, I mean, at Tulsa and then home against East Carolina, which were the last two games, he only played 26 and then 22 minutes, and he scored a combined 15 points in those two games, shot 2 of 10 from 3 points. So things are turning around for this team. He's not been a good three-point shooter, 32%. And then at 6'9", in athletic, you'd hope that he'd shoot better than 44% from two and 65% from the free throw line. He just hasn't been good, but he should 100% still declare for the draft. Just get out of, unless you're going to transfer somewhere else and get some better coaching from Penny Hardaway, because he's a different player than Penny. That's the reality of this. He's not the same player as Penny Hardaway. Penny was a much stockier guy who could control the play of the team. That's just not what Imani Bates has shown us. If he can go somewhere else in a much better situation, fine. If not, go to the draft. He's still going to get drafted because these teams see his potential, and you're going to get coached up.
Yeah, it's probably a situation, too, to where it just probably didn't work out the way it was intended to.
No.
Do you think he was probably a bit too inexperienced and too young for the moment?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. Because, like I said, he had to reclassify. Like, he was born here. Wild. What year was Imani Bates born in, Nick?
Oh, God.
2004.
2004?
2004.
Oh, my God, I feel old.
So, I mean, I'm 2.5 years older than Imani Bates. So, listen, he's a fantastic player. No one's going to deny his talent. But it just didn't work out for him at Memphis. There's no other way around it. And games where he has not played, they have two losses. And they're 5-2 without him. Or 6-2 without him. So,
yeah, that tells the story.
They're a better team without him. There's no doubt about it.
That tells the story 100%. So we've pretty much covered the fact that they need to win the next three games, home against Temple, home against Wichita State, at South Florida. Those are pretty much must wins. I think we've covered that basis pretty well. The Houston game on the 6th. A couple of questions before we move on to our next segment. If they win against Houston, provided that they win those three games they need to win, how much does Memphis need to do in the conference tournament to secure themselves?
If they win the next three games and then lose against Houston, I think they need to just handle their business in the early rounds.
If they lose against Houston.
Yeah, if they lose. If they win all four games, they're in. I think they're in.
And you would not knock a bad loss against them for getting in?
No, I wouldn't.
And that would be – and given the trajectory of not only Memphis, also Houston, and also SMU to a certain extent – that'd be a big game in the American Athletic Conference title picture for the regular season.
Yeah, it'd be massive.
That would be a massive, massive game that we'd be talking about in this program in a few weeks. To move on now to our bubble watch segment and perhaps the teams that have gotten the short end of the stick as of late. And it's a situation where now we are considering teams who perhaps might have played their way out of the bubble over the course of this last week. And there are some teams that, unfortunately, just don't have the opportunities left on their resume. UAB is one of them. That loss they took against North Texas was a massive hit.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is, they only have four games left. Two of them are in Quadrant 3. Two of them are in Quadrant 4. They don't have any more Quadrant 1 opportunities unless they get North Texas on a neutral floor. And that is definitely something. Now, if North Texas gets into the top 30 of net, which they're 38th, so it is definitely possible, they could potentially add another quad one game by proxy. But at this point, you kind of have what you have at this point. This resume is not enough.
No, UAB is not an at-large team.
No.
They are very capable of winning the Conference USA Conference Tournament.
Right.
And that, of course, guarantees you a spot in the NCAA Tournament. Now, their next three games. At UTSA, 318th. At UTEP, 166.
This is Ken Pom numbers, Miss. Right?
Yeah, Ken Pom. These wins don't help you.
Right. So, and now just put this in the net perspective. The two road games, two of the three road games they have left, UTSA and Southern Mississippi, are two of the worst teams in the country by net.
Yeah.
It's bad. UTEP is in quadrant three. It may stay there, depending on what UTEP does the rest of the way. Louisiana Tech, that home game, will definitely stay in quad three.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have a lot of opportunities left. We'll talk a lot more about the situation in Conference USA on our At the Party episode Tuesday morning, 8 o'clock a.m. Arizona time on your preferred podcast platforms. But it's definitely something that is just not looking too good for UAB's particular case. Kansas State is another team. Picked up a loss against Oklahoma State on the road. Now 4-10 in quad one. The situation wasn't looking very good for them at the start of Saturday, and I can't imagine it changing too much now. But there are opportunities for this to change. It's not like UAB. Kansas State has opportunities left in quadrant one and quadrant two.
Right, but do you expect Kansas State to go on the road and win at Kansas?
No.
The answer is no. Do you expect them to go on the road and win at Texas Tech?
No.
No, but two quad two games. Iowa State at home, Oklahoma at home. Those are two teams that haven't really done much in conference play. They're not playing well. Kansas State probably needs to go 2-2. And you know what? If they lose one of those quad two games, but they win one of the quad ones, you're probably helping yourself out more than if you go 2-0 in the quad two and then 0-2 in the quad one. So K-State, try and go 2-2 over the last four, and you're in a better spot going into the Big 12 tournament. And then you're on a neutral floor, and anything can happen there.
Yeah, and you get more leeway in the net system for quad one opportunities, so there's that as well.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like, you know, say they go 2-2 and pick up the two quad two wins, I just don't think it's going to do anything for them. I mean, 4-12 in quad one, 5-2 quad two, no bad losses elsewhere. Like, I just don't know if that's going to help you too much.
No, I mean they're tough to read because they don't have the impressive wins, and like their quad one wins, they're at Texas, which is a great win. They beat Texas Tech at home, which is another great win. At TCU, like, is that impressive? I don't know. Like, it's a quad one win. Not all quad one wins are the same.
Right, exactly.
And then at Iowa State, that's a good quad one win. But like, you know, they've missed a lot of their opportunities, so. K-State's probably on the outside. They need to go 2-2. If they go 3-1, I mean, they're really staring down.
Yeah,
a possible
bid. I think they'll be in the conversation. It'll just be that question of would 5 quad one wins and 11 losses and whatever else you do in the conference tournament be enough for Kansas State? There's opportunity for the Wildcats to re-enter the conversation. I just don't know to what extent they'll be able to do that, really. Virginia Tech's another team that the bracketologists really didn't like to put in the projected field, and they didn't do themselves any favors. Home against North Carolina, 65-57 loss.
They had their worst shooting game of the season, and it was against a team that has not defended the three ball well at all.
Yeah, and it was one of your contrarians, too, so that didn't help.
Oh, I was very frustrated.
Yeah, that didn't help you out at all, but this Virginia Tech team does not have a quad one win on their schedule. By the way, props to North Carolina, who finally got out of that club.
They still haven't beat a team in the NCAA tournament field. So.
Yeah, but the Michigan game became a quad one game by proxy. And so it'll be interesting for them going forward. But back to Virginia Tech, they've had 5 chances in quad one, no wins. They'll have one more opportunity at Miami to get a quad one win under their belt. At Clemson on March 5th, a quad two game. Couple of quad three games for them, home against the Louisville at Georgia Tech. A team that going into Saturday was only in 8 of 119 brackets. I think those are also backlog brackets. You do have to take that into consideration as well when looking at the matrix. A team that has a very few opportunities, and they're few and far. And I think their problem at this point is that, obviously, two quad three losses doesn't help your cause. the road game against Boston College about a month ago, the home game against North Carolina State at the start of 2022. It didn't help them. It's going to continue to linger on their resume. And this is a team that has a bunch of talent to try and make something out of the NIT and nothing more, I think.
Yeah, they're one of the best shooting teams in the country. So, I mean, they could also make a run in the ACC tournament regardless.
And with how weak the ACC is, I wouldn't see an opportunity like that out of the question.
No, of course. We were talking with Syracuse fan Ethan Schwager before the show, and he was trying to tell us that Syracuse can be an at-large team. And I'm like, no. And then I looked at the schedule. I'm like, well, like maybe. But, I mean, Virginia Tech, they can play their way in, especially if they go 4-0 in these four games. Miami does not defend the three ball very well. That's a winnable game for them.
Yeah, it is.
If we're being honest. If they go 4-0, and they would be, let's see, they won six. So entering postseason play, winning 10 of your last 11, I mean, it's a conversation.
Very much so.
But you have to win that game at Miami if you want to be an at-large team.
But it's really about how quickly are you able to rise compared to some of the other bubble teams. And I do think that 4-0 would definitely do that for them. But is it almost too little too late at that point, entering the ACC tournament with that?
Right, and then you can play yourself in at the ACC tournament.
Right.
I mean, I'm just going to pull up the standings here for the ACC. I mean, they're currently in the middle. If they go 4-0, they're all of a sudden 12-8 in ACC play. You're probably looking at yourself being a 5 seed.
Yeah. And what's the 4th place team in the conference?
Miami.
And what's their conference record at this
point?
They're
11-5.
11-5. So, able to take a lot of chaos for Virginia Tech to earn that double bye into the quarterfinals. I don't think it's anything.
It's not happening. And, like, you're a team that needs to play yourself into the field. Do you want the double bye?
Probably
like,
not.
Legitimately. You could use that extra game on your resume. Now it's probably going to be a game against NC State, Clemson, Georgia Tech. I don't know how exactly that bracket worked. It's not going to be a game that helps you out, but I mean,
it depends on where it lies. Like, it could be a quad 2 game, or it could be a quad 3. It just kind of depends who you get.
It's going to be a lower seeded team, cuz then you're going to turn around and you're going to play the 4 seed if you're the 5 seed, of course. So Virginia Tech, you probably want to go 4-0 and then work your way up, and then I mean, if you're the 6 seed and then you play Duke in the final, that like you win every game until now you play Duke in the final. And then you can maybe win or lose that game.
Yeah, there's a lot of what-ifs that could potentially see Virginia Tech re-enter that conversation.
They shoot the ball well. They're the best shooting team in this conference.
Yeah, and you want to talk about conference tournaments, it might be a bid steal, or that might be one to really follow over the course of time.
100%. I think that, the A-10, maybe even the Pac-12 are the best.
We've lost the ACC tournament in the last several years for a ton of other reasons other than a bid steal. This may bring a whole new element into it.
Yeah.
St. Louis is not one of those bubble teams that perhaps played themselves out. And you think, absolutely not.
No, they're not a tournament team.
Yeah.
No.
And I'd absolutely agree with that. I mean, St. Louis was barely hanging on by backlog bracket, I guess we could probably say here. But they did finish up their final qualifying opportunity with a loss, a bad loss by the score at Davidson. Only one win there, 2 quad 3 losses. That's not going to help their case whatsoever. Now, there are 3 games for them in quad 2, and they need games in that quadrant badly. And at the moment, it's looking like Rhode Island might be one that bounces into quad 3. This is a team that they can't have that. But if that game stays in quad 2, it's 3 games for them in quad 2. So the potential, should you win out, I'm not saying they will, but should they win out, that's a situation where you would be 5-3 if that Rhode Island game were to stay there in that quadrant. St. Joseph at home right now, quad 4 game, you can't really lose it anyway. But I mean, it's not a possibility for me to see St. Louis going to the tournament at large. I don't think that's going to be possible. You have a few other teams to really work your way through as well in the A-10 to position yourself there, that being VCU and Dayton, and they both have their resume flaws too.
Right. They have beat a couple of teams that are probably, I mean, Boise State's going to be in the tournament. They won at Boise State. That's an impressive win. Iona, they're going to be the favorite to represent the MAC. So, I mean, they do have some wins. They beat Dayton at home. That's obviously big because they've been one of the better teams in the conference. But, I mean, it's just hard. I don't see a way St. Louis can get in without winning the A-10 tournament, which is, we know, someone outside of Davidson is probably going to win the A-10 tournament, especially the way Davidson plays, just refusing to play defense. They'll shoot the ball like crazy, but...
Yeah, and I'll talk about Davidson a little bit here in our next segment in a little bit, but that's not a for-sure situation either with them. Let's get into our next segment, as I mentioned. It is our Bonanza Ranking, and as you fans of the show may know, it's a segment we will rank literally anything and everything. This week's Bonanza Rank, the three bubble teams in must-win situations this week, to clarify, is our teams that we think need to win out within this week's schedule. So it's not a team that has a quality game they can lose and they have to win the other one. These are straight-up teams that need to win all of their games this week. My number three, I will start off with Memphis. We've talked about them in very big detail. A couple of home games that are in quadrant three. We'll see where Wichita State ends up because that game may push itself into quad two. Wichita State performs well. You would love to have that game in quad two if you win that. But even then, you can't really take a hit there in that game either because if that game stays in quad three, you got three quad three losses, and they don't have enough quality wins, in my book, to really get in on that note. So home against Temple, home against Wichita State, I think they need to win both.
Yeah, my number three is going to be Indiana. Coming off a four-game losing streak, you're kind of at a point where you need to turn it around. Otherwise, your season could kind of fall apart. At Ohio State is going to be a tough test for them, but Tracy Jackson Davis, Race Thompson, maybe they can contain E.J. Liddell, make the young freshman guards for Ohio State, beat them. And then home against Maryland, you really can't lose that game. So I think Indiana, they're going to be looking at it. They need to win these games this week. And then also on Sunday at Minnesota, that's a game where you could easily fall, and that's not a fun one you want to lose.
My number two is Davidson. I mentioned I'll be talking about them here. This is a team that is nowhere near safe. And one of the bracket matrixes, 11 seeds. Really solid win by all means for this team. That's going to be in quadrant number two as of right now against St. Louis. They're 3-3 there. 2-1-1 there with one more opportunity at Dayton. But before that game, you got two games this week in quadrant four that you cannot lose. Home against Fordham and at Duquesne. If they lose any one of those games, God help this Davidson team, because the fallout from that is going to be ugly for them very, very quickly. And I would imagine a lot of bracketologists would take Davidson right out of the bracket. And that's even before getting to a game home against George Mason and their one final quad one opportunity at Dayton to close out the regular season. But you cannot worry about those opportunities right now. You have got to worry about these two games. If you lose one of them, chances are this is not going to be a fun ride down the seed list for Davidson. It could mean a fall completely out of the projected field of 68.
Yeah, I've got Memphis here, number two. I mean, two home games, Memphis, Temple, and Wichita State. You can't lose those two games, and you got to set yourself up for that game against Houston. They've done a good job of late. Obviously, slipping up against SMU, you got to rebound after that. I got Memphis at number two.
BYU at number one.
Yeah, oh man, they better not
lose. Oh my gosh. The dream of a four-bid West Coast Conference relies on BYU not losing this week. If they take another quad four hit, they're done.
Oh, absolutely. I think
they're done.
They're going to have to do work in Vegas. That's the reality with BYU. Because it's also going to be bid stealers. I mean, they're on the outside looking in at this point. They have nine losses. They lost four straight in the West Coast Conference. And, I mean, two of the losses are fine. You know, San Francisco's good. Obviously, Gonzaga, best team in the country. But at Pacific and then Santa Clara, those were losses they just could not take. Also, losing to Vanderbilt, not in the tournament. I mean, the Creighton loss looks a little bit better now. At Utah Valley, just not a good loss. They might play themselves in the WAC. But BYU is not a tournament team right now. They've looked horrible of late. They're going to have work to do in Vegas. They're probably going to need to get to that final game.
We'll talk about BYU in detail here in a little bit. Is that your number one as well?
No, just because, I mean, they're going to win those two games. Loyola Marymount and Pepperdine. They're both teams outside the top 200 in KenPom, so they're going to win those two games. For me, it's Michigan. With what happened at Juwan Howard today, I mean, it's reasonable to assume that Juwan Howard's not going to be coaching their next couple of games. If you're Michigan, your season could absolutely unravel after this. You're already on the bubble. You have two home games against two good teams who are also probably going to be in the NCAA tournament field. Rutgers, got to set the tone. Rutgers can come in and beat you. They've already gone on the road and beat Wisconsin, so they can go on the road and win a big game. They played fairly well against Purdue, lost by 12. That's about what the metrics projected. Then you have Illinois at home. Massive game. Illinois one of the best teams in the Big Ten. If Michigan doesn't have a strong week after this Juwan Howard incident, they could completely unravel and not even come close. They could play themselves off the bubble. So I think Michigan's number one because of what happened today, not during the game, but after the game.
Yeah, it's definitely a big concern for them. Let's discuss BYU in a little more detail, because this is a team that going into Saturday, in Saturday's Matrix update, was the final team in, which is very, you could say what you want about that, but a resume that has three quad one wins, no loss in quad three, the one loss in quad four, they're 4-4 in quad two. It's a bit of a mix in those top two quadrants, which this is about the Paramount bubble resume, you know? A team that has some wins within those top two quadrants, hasn't been dominant in those two quadrants, a fall in the bottom two quadrants. This is the Paramount bubble resume right here that we're looking at with this BYU team.
Yeah, and they could get some help. San Diego State's trying to play their way up for that to be a quad one win. They're, of course, on the bubble. Same with Oregon. They're off the bubble now, like on the wrong side. And that, of course, is a massive win early on in the year that helped them out a lot. Oregon's trying to play their way up. They're currently 63, San Diego State 34. So it's more reasonable that San Diego State could move up.
And I would really root for San Diego State if I was BYU. That has a big potential to bump up into quadrant number one and give them another quad one win.
Right, and for San Diego State's sake, just because I'm an Aztecs fan, I'm rooting for BYU to lose because they're on the bubble, and that game is going to be at quadrant one no matter what because it was on the road, and they're currently well inside the top 75 at 54. So that'll remain a quad one game, but they've just shot themselves in the foot.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the reality of the situation.
And BYU, you know, no matter what they do in this next week, which they need to win against Pepperdine at home, they need to win against Lower Marymount at home, they do not have control of a bye to the quarterfinals in the West Coast Conference tournament. They do not have control of that.
And it's kind of similar to Virginia Tech. It's like, well, you know, you want the bye because you want to win the tournament, but you also got to take a realistic look. Gonzaga's in that tournament. Can you beat Gonzaga, or is someone else going to beat Gonzaga? I mean, there's only going to be two opportunities because Gonzaga's already won the conference. They have the bye to the semifinal. For BYU, that extra game on the resume might be able to help you because you might
would
be
it
on
though?
The out.
Because that would very likely be, I mean, there's not a lot of opportunity for that to be a quad three. It would likely be quad four.
BYU's got to play themselves in. That I think that's the reality of it. Like, yeah, you mentioned it. It's not going to be a good game, but they need wins. That's what they need.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. I'm not going to take anything away from your argument. But if I'm BYU, I want to avoid a trap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I'm in a dire situation. I would rather avoid that trap and get a better team to face off against right away. I mean, it will, given the West Coast Conference, it will very likely still be a trap.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's like four teams, Santa Clara.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the pack.
Right, 100%.
But I would much rather have that straight bye directly into the quarters, because the West Coast Conference, for those that don't know and those who have not listened to us for, I guess, several weeks now we've been talking about this, the West Coast Conference uses a stepladder format. Top two teams are directly into the semis, 3 and 4 directly into the quarterfinals, 5 and 6 directly into the second round, and then your first round from there.
But, I mean, here's what we're looking at, Nick, is they're currently a game behind Santa Clara. They only played Santa Clara once, and they lost that game. So they lost the tiebreaker for seeding. So they basically need Santa Clara to lose both their games, and BYU has to win both their games. We already talked about who BYU plays. Santa Clara plays at Pepperdine, who was last in this conference, and then they're host Portland to end the season. They're not going to go 0-2 in those games. I mean, if they do, like you mentioned, that'll make it easier for BYU, but just adding that extra game on your resume, well, it might help. Like I said, it's dangerous. You're 100%
right. It's very dangerous, and I don't think it adds much.
No, and it's a little bit of a different situation because Virginia Tech is further off the bubble than BYU is. I mean, that's an obvious statement, but BYU, I mean, they've done this to themselves. So
absolutely. I 100% agree with that.
They're in a trouble spot. As the 5 seed, you'd, doing a mental bracket here, you're probably looking at San Diego or Pacific. And, I mean, it's not going to help you. I mean, the teams you're looking at are San Diego, Pacific, Loyola Marymount, and Pepperdine, who are all
And those and every single one of those scenarios would be a quad four game.
Okay, I mean
every single one of those scenarios.
So yeah, you want that four seed? I'll take that back. But yeah, it's not like, it's just, not gonna happen.
Yeah, there's just not enough reward for the risk you'd be taking.
Right. No, you're right. I mean, but it's not gonna happen. That's
yeah. And
unless
that's just,
Santa Clara loses both their games and BYU wins both. But if that happens, there's a way they could maybe even play up into San Francisco. Because San Francisco is the same record. At that point, it doesn't make a difference because you're getting that path. But
yeah,
San Francisco is also at 8-5.
Yeah. Let's get into now our game predictions for this next week. And I think we're going to run back to the double pick weekend again because it was particularly successful for me.
It was.
Yeah, outside of UAB, it was a perfect Saturday for me at 8-1. The Indiana-Ohio State game is tomorrow on Monday. So we're just going to add that to our other midweek picks that we're going to make. So at the moment, I am 3 ahead of containing, which through a big weekend for me with that. And, you know, sometimes it's best to not be the contrarian, but we'll see where things go this week.
Shock.
Yeah. You're the one that knows all about that. You got a little work to do. 10 games behind me, but, of course, there's no better time than now because we're going to have the next 2 weeks of picks. Of all kinds of picks in bracket season, you're definitely still right in the thick of it.
Right.
For the competition between the three of us. And let's get straight into it here. We're going to give you all of our midweek picks for this week. We'll give you 5 of our weekend picks for this weekend. To see the other 5, you'll have to follow us on Twitter at College Bonanza for those and a very good mix of games for that particular collection there. Midweek, first up, Villanova at UConn. I end the contrarian going with Villanova. I just think Villanova is going to really assert themselves here in this game. It will be a very tough environment. I will give that. And this was a bit of a tougher one for me here. But I do like Villanova just a tad more in this particular game.
Yeah, my problem with Villanova right now is they're not healthy. That win against Providence is one of the most impressive wins of the season when you consider the atmosphere, the winning streak for Providence, the fact they haven't won any games. But,
and just how well Providence wins close games.
Yeah, and then they turned around and they did not look good against Georgetown. Now, Georgetown has played actually surprisingly well on the road as of late. They obviously have not won because they are winless since their win over Howard on December 15th, which is brutal. And there was also news today that Patrick Ewing received a contract extension after winning the Big East Conference Tournament last year. So rough look there. But Gillespie and Moore are playing with injuries right now. And I think playing at UConn, who the metrics say is a better team significantly than Providence, I think it's going to be a tough one.
San Diego State at Boise State. I'm a little surprised to get the contrarian here, Sturinger, going against your Aztecs.
Yeah, well, the Aztecs have burned me several times this year, picking them, especially on the road. We saw them lose at BYU. We saw them lose at Utah State. Going to Boise is a tough atmosphere. It's going to be a first game to 50. Didn't even get to that point the last time these two teams played. Looking at the final scores, 42-37. Projected score in KenPom is 59-56, Boise State victory. I just think going on the road, it's going to be tough for San Diego State. They have not proven that they can make shots in close games, and I think Boise State's going to edge them out.
And that's a team in Aztecs that need good quality wins, a big opportunity for them there.
Yeah, they got 3 left.
Yeah, LSU at Kentucky. We're all going with Kentucky, the 3 of us. Gonzaga at San Francisco. All of us are going with Gonzaga there. That would be a big opportunity for San Francisco to lose there. Wyoming at Colorado State. Mr. Stuart the Contarian again going with Wyoming.
I like Wyoming better than Colorado State. They've been the much better team analytically. They've gone on the road and got some big wins. I think they can do it again here. Colorado State, they've been impressive all year. They only have 4 losses, but just lost at UNLV by 21 points. They've had some really stinkers, and I think Wyoming can go in and shock them.
That's going to be a very fun game to watch.
Yeah.
It really will be. The weekend slate is absolutely loaded with a lot of fun. The 2 games, which we were all unified, Kentucky and Arkansas, we're all going with Kentucky, and Gonzaga at St. Mary's, we're all going with Gonzaga. So the 2 teams we were all going with for the midweek picks, pretty much.
Yep.
In that case, which would be very easy on me to make the graphics, for sure. Purdue at Michigan State. Mr. Contini is going with Michigan State here at home against the Purdue Boilermakers.
I don't get it.
Yeah,
I
mean, it's an interesting one.
And Purdue has lost some like inexplicable games this year.
Yeah.
So, especially some on the road. We'll see. But Michigan State has been a mess lately. There's been rumors that they have some locker room issues, and they've been releasing players a lot less to the media. You wonder why the media loves Tom Izzo. It's because Tom Izzo and their program is very friendly to the media. So that was a shock to see that players and coaches have been a lot more knit tight, not letting anything out, and that those are the rumors surrounding Michigan State, and that would explain why they're not playing well.
Yeah, the next two games, I had a bit of trouble picking these next two. Kansas at Baylor. You're the contrarian here, Mr. Stern, with Baylor here.
Yeah, I'm ready to die picking a Kansas game again. I've been so bad picking Kansas games this year. I mean, I'd have to look back.
You'll probably thank me that I did include an Alabama game in here.
Yeah.
You've been bad at that, too.
Those teams have killed me. Thank you, Kentucky, for beating them this week. But Baylor at home, I think they're going to play hungry. We saw Scott Drew get very emotional at the end of that game, so I think his players are going to come out motivated here. Kansas running in transition, that's the weakness for Baylor, so Baylor's got to keep control of the ball and not turn it over a lot.
And Auburn at Tennessee, this is another game I had a tough time picking here. I'm going with Auburn as the contrarian. I just think Auburn's kind of due for a bounce back. I think that they will be a bit motivated to get the bounce back off their shoulders, and if there's not motivation for this team to be a one seed, I mean, I don't know what else they could really tell you. The bracket makes on Saturday had a bit of distance, but that was before that loss, which will be very interesting to see what ends up happening from that.
Yeah, teams that Tennessee has beat at home this year, Kentucky, LSU, Arizona. I think they're going to knock off Auburn too. They've been such an impressive team at home, have not lost a game at home this year. I think that trend continues, and they beat Auburn. Auburn's not a good three-point shooting team. You got to make threes on the road.
Yeah,
259th in the nation.
Yeah, that'll be a big game for the SEC regular season title race. If Auburn wants to try and get a big straight one on that, that is a big game for them to win. That's all the time we have for this week's edition of the College Basketball Roundtable here on Blaze. A reminder, we'll have a new episode for you on our after party, 3 minutes and additional content there Tuesday, 8 a.m. Arizona time on your preferred podcast platform. And as always, please follow us on Twitter at College Bonanza for all of the College Basketball Bonanza's content. For Dominic Stern and for third man of our crew, Doug Tina, he was in Cleveland. I'm Nicholas Hodel, leaving you with our tradition of playing you one shining moment. And it's a fantastic song. I know Dominic Stern loves it. So we're going to give his ears a gift, all of your ears a gift. And we'll see you right back here on Blaze next Sunday, 7 o'clock p.m. Arizona time. Have a good week, everyone.